Finally, in terms of quadrants and an understanding of the integral model, it's relatively intuitively obvious how lines, levels, states, and types fit into the upper left quadrant. However, I get confused when I try to understand how levels, lines, states, and types fit into the other three quadrants. Can you elucidate this for me?
So it sometimes helps to remember when you're saying, okay, what's an example in the upper right quadrant or the upper left quadrant and so on, is that really what all you're really doing is you're looking at the same thing from a different perspective. So we can just randomly go around here and I'll give a few. We have a little bit of understanding of what levels, lines, states, types are when we're talking about I, or these interior psychological states and stages and levels and so on. In the lower left quadrant, we're really talking about this extraordinary thing called we. And there are a whole lots of other ways of looking at it, but we're really saying, what is a we? I mean, right now, all of us are slowly developing a kind of mutual understanding. This is a specific social group that has come together. It's a specific we that is building up. And a we is composed, that is to say, its internal parts are not its members, but the previous moments of we. So every holon has a history, and a we is a history of our interactions. So that's why we are not a single organism. There's not one big organism that says jump, and all 50 of us jump up and run across the floor. That's why an individual holon and a social holon are not the same thing. So a social holon has members in the social holon, and what's internal to a social holon is the communication between the members. That's Nicholas Luhmann's point, and it's a point that I developed in the lower left quadrant, and then he developed in the lower right quadrant, and I insist both of them kind of go together. So what we're talking about in the lower left quadrant, and I'll go around and give examples of all of these, but I'm just reminding people, is we want to look at, can we talk about levels of we? Can we talk about types of we? Can we talk about lines, states, and so on? And even in a relationship, you know, you and your mate, you and your spouse, this is a we, and there are examples of levels, lines, states, and types in those. But again, they're going to be a little bit different, aren't they? Because individual and social are not identically the same. And in some ways they're similar, in some ways they're quite different. In the upper right, part of the reason that people sometimes have trouble seeing some of the correlates in the upper right is that the scales of measurement in the upper right and the upper left are really very different in terms of what you can represent on a single sheet of paper. And this is why it's so confusing. In the upper right is probably the easiest to see levels on a large scale. In other words, atoms to molecules to cells to organisms to reptilian brainstem to limbic system to neocortex. Those are all actual physical envelopes. They physically envelop their predecessors. They are physical holons in the most obvious and undeniable way. And that's pretty easy to see. And so I often use the upper right as a quick entree into what a holon means and what levels means and so on. But it's complicated to see the immediate correlations in human beings with the upper left, because in the upper left with human beings, we usually pick it up at something like, you know, beige or purple, to use spiral dynamics as an example. And that's sort of the lowest stage we generally pick it up with in human beings in the upper left. But in the upper right, that's already at the triune brain. So you have to adjust scales and go, whoa, okay. Now you could, if you wanted, in the upper left, give an actual developmental series of levels that go all the way down to atoms or molecules, or in humans' case, cells. And when would that be? You would start the history of you, let's say John Smith, at conception. That would be the real level one in your cycle graph. Here's John Smith, zygote. And there you find one cell, and that would be, you know, and then inside that cell would be molecules, and inside that would be atoms. So those would be the three of the lowest levels of feeling that John Smith has. He started out as a cell surrounding molecules, surrounding an atom, and that was it. So now we can start the four quadrants on old John Smith there, and then all the other four quadrants start to balance out, and you can say, okay, now I see how they fit. Okay. And so if we take, for example, when John Smith is a zygote, And he's a single cell with lots of molecules, lots actually organelles in the cell. And so he's a eukaryotic single cell with prokaryotic organelles inside the cell. And those are things like mitochondria. Now, the thesis is that those mitochondria used to be single cells themselves that were captured by eukaryotic or true cellular organisms, as opposed to prokaryotic or sort of predecessor or proto-cellular organisms. And Lovelock, the gentleman that introduced the Gaia hypothesis, most people don't know what the actual Gaia hypothesis was as a scientific hypothesis. And that was that between the material world of just sheer matter and on Earth and the first true cells, the eukaryotic cells, there's a thin layer of prokaryotic cells around the face of the planet, which there is. That layer of cells he called Gaia. Now, Gaia has come to mean this whole mythic biosphere thing, and it's supposed to be some sort of scientific hypothesis. Nothing of the sort. I mean, it's another boomeritis myth that has absolutely no relation to reality as far as we can tell. But the original Gaia hypothesis is exactly correct and happens to be the lower right quadrant of that prokaryotic cell, in this case, John Smith. So you can run around the four quadrants right there, starting John Smith at conception, and start to see how these things are related. And then as the zygote starts dividing into four cells, and then eight, and then 16, and then 32, then soon you're going to start forming systems in the upper right. And of course, now you're going to start, in physiological terms, developmental lines. And these lines, this is one example of developmental lines in the upper right, and these will turn out to be organ systems and different systems in the body, nervous system, skeletal system, muscular system, digestive system, hormonal system, and so on. And you can do a quite complex levels and lines analysis of the human organism like that, and you can find that in almost any standard biology text. But that's basically what's going to happen, is then the neural stem is going to develop, and so you can see that moving all the way up in the upper right quadrant. We're starting in the limbic system, and neocortex will form. At that point, in the upper left, John Smith is starting to have, maybe a three-month-old fetus, John Smith, is starting to have waking, dreaming, and deep sleep states. And those states of consciousness in the fetus will correspond, if you could get an EEG on little baby or fetus John Smith, get it on his little brain, you'd start to see alpha and beta and theta and delta waves in the upper right states. Those are brain states that would correspond with consciousness states in the upper left. And those will become, well, they're the same. They're the two sides of the same thing. So of course you're going to find they're not identical, but certain, we speak loosely of them being correlated or even interacting. And again, that's not terribly accurate, or tetra-acting or tetra-interacting. But it's the best we can do with the language that's evolved so far to pretty flatlandish. So these states will continue to correspond to each other. And the question then is, okay, what happens in the lower left quadrant? How do we find states? Well, let's take John Smith at 3 or 4 months, still in the fetus, still in the womb. Right now, John Smith, at the level of prokaryotic cells, he's still interacting with Gaia. And if there's a fluctuation in Gaia, he will feel it in his body, literally. At the level of next, you can go up any level of complexity, and whatever that level of complexity is, his organism is interacting with organisms at that level of interaction around it. So we're going to the highest level in this case, where he's 4 months old, 5 months old, in the womb still. There's a neocortex, a triune brain. He's have waking, dreaming, deep sleep states of consciousness are already starting to occur. And he's in very intimate interrelation, particularly with one other organism at that point, and that's the mother. And so if you start looking at emotional states in the mother, you'll find that they start to be reflected in the fetus. There's a we forming. And that means that exteriorly, if you look at it in the lower right quadrant, then it's the hormones of the mother in the upper right quadrant interacting with the upper right quadrant of little John Smith. They're both in a hormonal state in the upper right quadrant, let's say, and that hormonal state corresponds with, let's say, a state of fear in the upper left in both of them. So in the lower left in both of them, we will be afraid, and there will be that contagion, that emotional contagion that human beings can experience almost any time. If you're with somebody that's happy, you tend to get happy, and if they're depressed, you can get depressed, and that's very, very much a state, four quadrant state affair, and your hormones will shift and so on. And so in the lower right quadrant, what you see is the mother, the physical organism of the mother, with the small physical organism of the fetus within her. That's what you see in the lower right. That's the first system that's forming at that level of complexity for little John Smith. So then John is born. He's 6 months old. He's 1 year old. Now he's moving into, we'll switch to spiral dynamics. In the upper left, he's come out of all these lower levels of consciousness, including prehension and irritability and the first very primitive proto-emotion shared by all mammals that have limbic systems, up into the first distinctly human stage of development, which is purple, or magic, or moving out of sensory motor into pre-operational. And at that point is usually when we start stage one at the human cycle graph, just for convenience. But you can see it goes down, 10 stages, 20, however many you want to count those individual stages leading up to that. But we can also, by taking that tour, we've seen that there are lines in the upper right that correspond to how particular individual systems are unfolding through their different levels of complexity. And I'll give an example of some other lines in a minute, particularly using subtle energy, which is very important. And we've seen states in very crude examples of state in the upper right, a hormonal state or a brain state is reflected in the upper left in a state of consciousness. And that will be reflected with whatever you will tend to start exchanging those states. Now, the same goes, of course, with levels and with types. So types can be, and we'll do this very quickly as well and just use the four quadrants again. A type is any typology that can occur at almost any stage of development. And you can use types, and I use types in a very broad way. Masculine, feminine is a typical example. There are masculine, feminine types at every level or stage of development. You can even use the Enneagram. There are 9 types at almost every stage of development, Myers-Briggs, that kind of thing. So I wanted to give a quick example of types in the four quadrants. So let's just use masculine, feminine, because what's already happened in the upper right quadrant is that mothering organism, presumably Mrs. Smith, is female. And so she has a certain hormonal mixture circulating in her physical organism in the upper right. And little John Smith, who is now has differentiated into masculine, has a different set of hormones circulating in his physical body. And so those are reflections of types. Basically, the masculine type, certainly testosterone, and the feminine type, more oxytocin and estrogen in particular. And that will be reflected around the quadrants in the upper right quadrant. Mostly what we can tell from testosterone is a physical behavior of increased sex and aggressive behavior. And in the upper left, the emotions that go with it. And they are typically stereotyped, but fairly accurately, as agentic and less communal, whereas oxytocin and estrogen tend towards communal and less agentic, relational and less agentic or autonomous in that sense. And that is reflected in any we between a man and a woman and a woman, and so on in the lower left. And in the lower right, let me just very briefly introduce subtle energies. Remember, in a mature human organism, there are at least 3 sheaths of energy, gross, subtle, and causal. And it gets very complex, but these 3 major sheaths of energy, gross, subtle, and causal, can be subdivided, and most traditions do, into, I would say, roughly about 7 levels of energy. And those are roughly equivalent on the interior to the 7 chakras. 7 levels of consciousness have these 7 levels of energetic exterior. But whatever state or stage is in the upper left has a energetic component in the upper right. And now we're talking about how states and types can come together in the upper right and lower right, as well as upper left and lower left. So if you just picture the upper right and the lower right, think of two magnets literally coming together, and you've often seen like iron filings coming off a magnet, and you put them together and you can see these fields of force and energy and influence, and the iron filings are all kind of forming figure eights and stuff like that as you move these magnets around. That's literally what happens to human bodies when they interact. That's what happens to any living body, and that goes all the way down to prokaryotic cells. They have a little bioenergetic field around them. But the general idea is that when any living body, any sentient being, interacts, then in the upper right they have these energetic fields. And these are going to interact with any other physical organism they come in contact with. So you're going to get in the lower right this complex system. And the system of its has its members who are in the system, and that's the organisms, but the system itself consists of the exchanges between the members. And that includes physical exchanges of communication. The signifiers that you and I are exchanging right now are an example of that. Those are all exchanges in the lower right quadrant. And also these subtle energies, and not so subtle, I mean the physical gross energies also. I mean we have gravitational pull we exert on each other and so on. But those are all parts of the exchanges that are internal to a system in the lower right. Now obviously in polite liberal society we generally talk about communication as exchange of signifiers and so on. We don't have to get into subtle energies. But they're there, they can be measured, and if you could put on goggles that allowed you to see gross, subtle, and causal energy, you would see instantly levels, lines, and states in the upper right and lower right. They would just jump out at you as physical entities. It would be very, very easy to spot. As it is, all we can see is usually the physical, gross stuff, and it's a little harder to spot some of these subtle things. But you could see an emotional energy field in the upper right, and you know exactly what a state is. And say that person is really in an emotional state, aren't they? And you'd be able to see it. So we're a little bit handicapped by that, but you know we get around it by talking about some of these other factors that are also involved, and particularly hormonal changes and brainwave pattern changes and so on, because those are there as well. So on the lower right, where you've got these organisms, physical living organisms that you can see and touch, exchanging information, communication, and energy, they're exchanging mass energy, gross, subtle, or causal, then the interiors of those exchanges are we. So the exteriors are its that are being exchanged, and the interior is mutual resonance or even mutual understanding, and that's the lower left. So that's the same occasion looked at from the four perspectives inherent. In every occasion, looked at it from an it, from an I, from an its, and from a we.
This concludes CD1 of the Integral Operating System, Going Further with Ken Wilber. We continue with CD2.